Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees podcast. Today I will summarize and review the book. Galahad and the Grail is the opening volume of Malcolm Gwight's poetic Arthurian sequence, Merlin's Isle and Arthuriad. Its lead, rather than presenting the Grail story as a modern fantasy novel or a prose retelling, Gwight works in a deliberately traditional ballad mode, using rhythm, repetition, and oral momentum to recover the communal feel of older narrative poetry. The book follows Sir Galahad and the Knights of Camelot as they undertake the quest for the Holy Grail, with the healing of the wounded Fisher King and the damaged land at stake. Its genre is best understood as contemporary epic poetry shaped by medieval romance, Christian theology, and mythic adventure. Gite, known as a poet, priest, and literary scholar, aims to restore the sacramental and Christian dimensions often softened or removed in modern Arthurian adaptations. The result is a work intended for reading aloud, family or group discussion, and literary reflection. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, ballad form turns the Grail quest into an oral and communal poem. One of the defining features of Galahad and the Grail is its commitment to ballad form. Gwight does not simply recount Arthurian material in elevated free verse. He uses a structure associated with memory, song, and communal recitation. This matters because Arthurian legend long existed as a shared storytelling inheritance, rather than as a private literary artifact. The ballad form creates forward motion, giving the quest a pace suitable for adventure, while also allowing repeated images and rhythms to accumulate spiritual weight. The result is meant to be heard as much as silently read. That distinguishes the book from many modern Arthurian retellings, which often prioritize psychological realism, political revision, or fantasy world-building. Gwight instead emphasizes the older relationship between poetry and public memory. The form may feel unfamiliar to readers expecting a conventional novel, but it also provides the central experience of the book, the sense that the Grail story is being sung back into cultural life. Secondly, the Grail is treated as a Christian mystery rather than a neutral magical object. Gwight frames the Holy Grail through the Christian and sacramental meanings that shaped much medieval Grail literature. In many contemporary adaptations, the Grail becomes a treasure, a symbol of power, or a vague emblem of personal fulfillment. Galahad and the Grail resist that flattening by placing the quest within a theological imagination in which matter can bear spiritual meaning. The Grail is not merely an object to be acquired. It is connected to purity, healing, grace, and the restoration of a broken order. This approach affects the moral structure of the poem. The knights are not only adventurers pursuing glory, but figures tested by desire, discipline, and spiritual readiness. The Christian emphasis does not remove the mythic atmosphere of faery, and wonder, instead, it interprets wonder as part of a sacramental world. For readers, this makes the book less a secular heroic quest and more a poetic meditation on holiness, vocation, and restoration. Thirdly, Galahad represents vocation, purity, and the cost of spiritual achievement. A past in the aspects of the Aegean, the choice to center Galahad is significant because he is traditionally the knight most closely associated with the successful achievement of the Grail. Gwight uses that inheritance to explore vocation rather than simple heroism. Galahad is not compelling because he is merely stronger or more skilled than other knights. He is marked by a calling that places unusual demands on him. In Grail tradition, worthiness is measured by inward formation as much as outward courage. This gives the quest a different logic from ordinary chivalric adventure. Battles, journeys, and encounters matter, but they reveal the state of the soul. Galahad, therefore, becomes a figure through whom the poem asks, what kind of person can approach sacred reality? The book does not need to discard knightly ideals such as courage and honor, but it subordinates them to spiritual obedience. That emphasis gives the narrative moral seriousness and prevents the Grail from becoming a mere prize at the end of a heroic route. Fourthly, the Wounded Land connects personal holiness with communal restoration. The Fisher King and the Wasteland are central to the Grail tradition because they link a ruler wound, a land disorder, and the need for healing. Gwight preserves this symbolic structure, making the quest more than an individual test. The damaged land reflects a larger rupture in creation, community, and spiritual perception. This gives the poem contemporary resonance without turning it into a direct political allegory. The idea that inner corruption and outer barrenness are connected is an old mythic pattern, but in Gwight's work it is also theological. Healing comes through grace, sacrifice, and right relation to the holy. The knight's journey through a world where visible landscapes carry moral and spiritual meaning. That approach contrasts with modern disenchantment, in which nature is often treated as inert material or decorative setting. In Galahad and the Grail, place is charged with significance. The restoration of the land depends on more than strategy. It requires a renewed relationship between humanity, creation, and divine mystery. Lastly, illustrated hardback presentation reinforces the book as a crafted artifact. The published form of Galahad and the Grail is part of its literary identity. The hardback edition, with woodcut-style illustrations by Stephen Kratz, presents the poem as an object to be kept, read aloud, and returned to rather than consumed quickly. This matters because the book is trying to recover an older relation to story, one shaped by ritual attention, visual imagination, and shared reading. The illustrations do not merely decorate the text, they support the medieval and mythic atmosphere by giving the reader visual pauses within a long poetic sequence. In a market where Arthurian material often appears as fast-moving fantasy series, cinematic retellings, or revisionist novels, this crafted presentation signals a different pace. The book asks for slower engagement, especially from readers interested in poetry, theology, or traditional narrative forms. Its physical and visual design, therefore, reinforces its central purpose to make Arthurian legend feel treasured, liturgical, and communal again. In conclusion, Galahad and the Grail is best suited to readers who enjoy Arthurian legend, narrative poetry, Christian symbolism, and works that bridge literary tradition with spiritual reflection. It may especially appeal to readers of C.S. Lewis, J.R.R.R., Tolkien, Tennyson, medieval romance, or modern writers who treat myth as a serious vehicle for meaning. Families, schools, reading groups, and church communities may find it useful because its ballad structure encourages oral reading and discussion. The intellectual benefit lies in seeing how the Grail story changes when its sacramental framework is restored. The practical benefit is a renewed attentiveness to courage, purity, vocation, and the relation between personal formation and communal healing. Compared with many Arthurian retellings, the book stands out because it is neither a prose fantasy adaptation nor a purely academic reconstruction. It is a contemporary poem that deliberately accepts the theological and formal demands of its source tradition. Readers seeking a fast, secular adventure may find its reverent tone and poetic structure demanding. Readers open to rhythm, myth, and Christian mystery will find a distinctive reimagining of the Grail quest that treats old legend as living inheritance rather than nostalgic decoration. If you would like to support Malcolm Gwight, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.